For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, March 26th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news, and we'll also gather around the virtual water cooler to talk about what we've been watching. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hiya.
All right, BJ, as we are recording this, Marvel Studios is still in the midst of slowly, agonizingly slowly, releasing the cast member names for Avengers Doomsday. They've been at this for at almost 4 hours at this point. I'm sure everyone who pays attention to this stuff online has been watching it or seen the memes and jokes about all of it. We have an article up on the site right now if you just want to, you know, basically scrape away all the nonsense and just get to the heart of the matter and see the names written out. But you and I have been watching directors' chairs on stages for a little while. It's just a fun day, you know, in the world of entertainment journalism. So that's where we are news-wise right now. I don't really have anything to add to that other than this is clearly the most ridiculous PR stunt since the Game of Thrones melting ice block incident of 2016 or whatever year that was.
Oh, so. My God. I forgot about that. Why did you remind me?
Okay, so let's move on to something that's maybe a little bit more exciting. So recently, the other day, Coyote versus Acme, which is a movie that we've talked about a lot and we thought was just basically dead because Warner Brothers decided to shelve the movie for a tax write-off. This movie actually might come out. So Catch Up Entertainment, which is the same distribution company that released The Day the Earth Blew Up, a Looney Tunes movie, is now in active negotiations to pick up the rights to Coyote versus Acme. So I'm sure you have some thoughts on this one, BJ.
Oh my God, if this happens, I'm going to be so insufferable. I'm going to be like buying out theaters for friends just to make sure that it does well, because nothing would bring me greater pleasure than this movie actually coming out and it being a massive financial success, just to really twist the knife in that botching the release of this movie is the dumbest thing anyone could have done.
Yes. So if everything goes according to plan, it sounds like the movie will be released theatrically in 2026. So it's not a done deal yet, but it sounds like it's on the way in the right direction finally. So that's great news for everybody who worked on this movie, who just thought that their work was going to be thrown in a vault somewhere and never seen by anyone. So that's excellent. Few more news items here, just real quick. I'm going to link to all of these articles in the show notes so you can find more information, but we have a lot to get to today, so I'm not really going to talk a lot about these. But Coco 2 was officially confirmed by Pixar. Personally, I'm not really thrilled about that. I love the original Coco, but I feel like that was a pretty self-contained story. Like, what do you do for Coco 2? The kid dies again or goes to the underworld again? I don't know. It just doesn't really seem like it's a story that demands a follow-up, but the requirements of capitalism basically mean that that's where we are and that's what's coming. Same thing for a new Power Rangers TV show that's coming to Disney Plus. So if you're into that, you can check out more information there. The last news item that I wanted to mention real quick is that the James Bond franchise now has producers, at least for one movie. We talked a lot about how Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson stepped aside. They were the longtime shepherds of this franchise. And now Amazon fully controls the rights to this property. Amazon has hired Amy Pascal and David Heyman to be the producers of the next Bond film. So we still don't have an actor or anything like that. But Amy Pascal is a longtime producer. She used to run Sony Pictures Entertainment. And she produces all of the Spider-Man movies, and she oversaw during her tenure at Sony the release of Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, and Skyfall. So she has some history with Bond. And then David Heyman is the producer of like the Harry Potter franchise and I think the Paddington movies as well. He's produced a bunch of stuff. So he's sort of the British component, I guess, to kind of, yeah, keep some country through line or what have you. So there's that. Do you have any thoughts on either of these names and kind of what this might mean for Bond? Do you care about James Bond at all, BJ?
I care about James Bond in the same way that I care about an institution like Mickey Mouse, where it's I'm not going to be like heartbroken about what happens with the future of like the film franchise or whatever. I don't hold a lot of these things precious, but I do have sort of a love of these, you know, these institutions that we have that have been going on forever and ever. And I would love for James Bond to continue to be kind of awesome, but also at the same time, there are some eras of James Bond that are like not great. So if this ends up being an era that's not great, oh boy, like nothing was lost. We're fine. We'll just try again next time, I guess.
Yeah, I am very curious and kind of intrigued at the idea that they've apparently only been signed on to work on one movie, according to one report that I saw. So that's fascinating. You would think that Amazon would want to hire effectively a Kevin Feige figure to oversee Bond for the foreseeable future, but that's not the route that they took here. They're just hiring these producers for one movie, I guess, just to see how it goes and make sure it's a big success or whatever before they start spinning things off and potentially doing TV shows and all the stuff that we expect to see Amazon do with this property. So that's just an interesting sort of footnote in this announcement. So there's that. Okay, let's jump into the water cooler, BJ. Tell me what you've been doing recently.
Alrighty, so I have been falling into rabbit holes of mental hygiene films. Do you know what a mental hygiene film is?
I have never heard of this. No, what is that?
Okay, so mental hygiene films, these are the category of films that you likely would have watched in school at some point about like, hey, kids, here's how to be an upstanding young American man. Like, it's those types of movies from the 40s into the 70s. A lot of, like, post-World War II sort of propaganda, but they're called mental hygiene films because they are meant to teach people how to be better people. But obviously, they are very much skewed in terms of them being very conservative and being very white in terms of what they're promoting. But I've been like watching a lot of these because a lot of them are available online because a lot of them have just been thrown onto YouTube because they're these weird novelties, but I've become very obsessed with them and looking at the ways that these films sort of have a connective through line with a lot of like the influencer propaganda that a lot of people are being fed today. So it's been very weird to see the parallels that you can draw between, you know, some Manosphere podcaster that's like, here's the right way to be a masculine man, and then look at a film from the 1940s that's essentially doing the exact same thing.
Huh. Do you have a favorite? I mean, I know that's a weird term to use when you're talking about something, some like a bizarre mini obsession like this, but is there one that stood out as maybe a better way to ask that question?
Oh, God. So there's so many of them, and a lot of them all have very, very similar names is the problem. Like some of like the famous ones that a lot of people know, like, do you know about like Duck and Cover, which is like the how to escape dangerous things? There's a South Park episode that makes fun of Duck and Cover where they're like escape from a volcano by ducking and covering. Absolutely ridiculous. But there is one that I can't remember the name of which one it is, but it's basically like teaching children how to be good children for their parents. And my wife has been doing the voice all around where one of the lessons they teach is like, when your father comes home for dinner, he probably had a tough day at work. So keep conversations light and easy. And it's basically like, don't annoy your dad, you pieces of shit. Like, it's so funny.
Okay, excellent. All right, let's get into what we've been reading. I'm still reading the same book that I've been reading for quite some time, so hopefully I'll be finishing that soon and be able to talk about it on the podcast. But what have you been reading recently, BJ?
I started reading Mallory O'Meara, a will say a friend of mine, but also somebody who writes incredible books. But she recently published a book called Daughter of Daring, The Trick Writing, Train Leaping, Road Racing Life of Helen Gibson, Hollywood's First Stunt Woman. And it is exactly what it sounds like. It is a really cool look at the first woman to ever be like a Hollywood stunt woman. Also a look at how dangerous movie stunts used to be before we started having all these like safety precautions that we now have. But, you know, this is, you know, Mallory writes a lot about women who are sort of forgotten about by Hollywood history. She's also the author of Lady from the Black Lagoon, which is about Millicent Patrick, the woman who designed the Creature from the Black Lagoon makeup and was pretty much erased by history until her book came out about it. It's just been really interesting to learn about, like, same problems as ever. You know, women are too weak. They shouldn't be able to be stunt performers. It's a thing that a lot of people believe even now, but Helen Gibson was crazy. Like, she's like Tom Cruise levels of like, yeah, I'll just stand on this plane while you fly it. Who cares?
Sweet. Okay. So that's called Daughter of Daring. Sounds pretty awesome. All right. Let's get into what we've been watching. Actually, let's take a quick break and then we'll get back into what we've been watching.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All right, so I watched a few things. I'm not going to go super deep on any of these. I had a lot of fun with Black Bag, which is the newest Steven Soderbergh movie, also written by David Koepp, same team that brought us Presence just a little over a month and a half ago.
Right, he's really going through it.
yeah, absolutely. He is on one right now. And Michael Fassbender and Cate Blanchett play a married spy couple in this movie. And could I follow every single twist and turn in the plot? No, I don't think I can legitimately tell you with a straight face that I could recount every beat of this movie, but the vibes are immaculate. And even though the movie doesn't really look all that great, like the costume design and production design is awesome. And they have the house that those two characters live in is like one of my favorite movie houses in quite some time. But the cinematography is like a little, I don't know, the lighting and the colors are like a little wonkier than I would expect from Soderbergh. It just kind of seems like maybe it was a result of his kind of like shoot fast, let's get this thing done kind of mentality that he's in right now. And sometimes that really works and turns out great. And sometimes the results, I guess, leave a little bit to be desired. But story-wise and mostly vibes-wise, this movie is really, really fun. And Tom Burke and Naomi Harris and Regé Jean Page and Marissa Abella from Industry and Pierce Brosnan shows up. The cast is really solid. So yeah, if you're in the mood for like a sleek adult thriller about spies and deception and things like that, Black Bag is pretty rad. Have you seen this movie?
Yeah, it's pretty solid. I agree with you with all of the points you're making, especially that like vibes wise, this movie is pretty fantastic. Yeah, I think the cast is great. It's been a while since I watched like a really cool, sleek adult spy thriller that wasn't related to a massive IP. Honestly, they should be looking at Soderbergh for Bond if they're really thinking about it.
Ah, that would be cool. I would definitely be curious to see what he would do with that. I wonder if the latest rumor is they're going after Alfonso Cuarón, who directed one of the Harry Potter movies, and he has a little bit of a history with David Heyman on that front. So that would be intriguing because that would mean that they're throwing out the kind of like historical precedent of like most of these directors need to be British. I think Cary Fukunaga, who directed No Time to Die, the most recent Bond movie, was the first American director to direct a Bond movie. But so, yeah, like all bets may be off in that front, or they could want to return to like, all right, we got to keep this as British as possible. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, if they're in the market for another American director, they could certainly do worse than Steven Soderbergh.
Right.
The next movie I wanted to mention real quick, I got the Blu-ray for a Charlie Chaplin movie called A Woman of Paris. Have you ever seen this?
I have not seen this one.
Yeah, I'd never even really heard of it, but it's a silent movie from 1923, and it is, despite the fact that it's written and directed and produced and I think scored as well by Charlie Chaplin, he does not appear in this movie. This is the only movie that he made where he is not the star or doesn't appear as an actor. And instead, it stars Edna Purviance, I think is how you pronounce her name. And it's like a straight drama. It's not a comedy either. And that's obviously what I know Charlie Chaplin for. I'm guessing what a lot of our listeners know him for. I've seen a handful of his movies. I've not caught up with everything that he's done. But this was very unusual because it's just a straight drama about this woman who falls in love with an aspiring artist, and they plan to leave their really tiny French village outside of Paris, and they want to go to the big city and get married. And something happens on the night that they're going to leave, and the woman decides to leave anyway and leave the guy behind. And then the action picks up, I think it's a year later, and she is like now this member of high society, and she's dating the richest guy in Paris. And then something happens where she comes back in contact with this old love of hers, this old flame. And the movie becomes a sort of a push and pull kind of narrative of, is she going to leave this rich, comfortable life that she's made for herself and go with her heart and go with the kind of true love component? And that's like a pretty familiar formula, but it's just really interesting. It was interesting for me to see Chaplin working on something like that in the early 20s in this silent movie format. So the very unusual, unexpected kind of thing. And like, I was expecting maybe even like a few little gags here and there, you know, like mm-hmm. he couldn't quite help himself to slip some comedy into this drama, but it's a pretty straight ahead drama the whole way through. So that's A Woman of Paris. It's now on Blu-ray from the Criterion Collection. And then I watched the first three episodes of a new Apple TV Plus show called Dope Thief. Is this one on your radar at all? There are so many shows out there, BJ. I never know. Like,
I'm so behind on so many things. This is one that's like, it's on my radar because I love Brian Tyree Henry, but I haven't watched it yet. So when I saw that you watched this, I was like, oh, good. Now I can kind of like get the rundown before I, you know, figure out how high up on my watch list this is going to end up.
Yes. So Brian Tyree Henry and Wagner Moura, who has appeared in several Apple TV Plus shows, they star in this show, and it takes place in Philadelphia, and it's about these two guys. And I'm going to give away the premise, which the opening scene of the show kind of plays it as a reveal. So I am going to give away this. So I guess if you don't want to know anything at all, just fast forward ahead a few minutes. But they play these guys who pose as DEA agents, and they do a lot of recon on low-level drug dealers in Philly. And they bust in and pretend to be DEA and take the drugs and the money that these low-level guys are hoarding or whatever. And they just kind of like get away scot-free. And they team up with this other guy, this sort of extra person who has just gotten out of prison and is like a friend of one of theirs. And Brian Tyree Henry's character is like not thrilled with this idea, but there's a promise of like making a lot of money. And his mom, who's played by Kate Mulgrew, the great Kate Mulgrew, really needs this money. So he decides to kind of like ignore the warning sign in the back of his mind and go ahead with this job. And of course, they end up sort of robbing the wrong people, and things go terribly wrong. And a bunch of very nasty people are out for revenge and are trying to hunt these guys down and potentially kill anyone who they love or means anything to them. And it's all about these guys trying to basically fight their way out of the situation and figure out how the heck they can appease these very, very serious drug dealers who they kind of wandered into this scenario. These are not like the typical low-level jerks that they are normally dealing with. I enjoy the show so far. I've only seen three episodes as mm-hmm. I record this, but it is very manic. Like, there is a lot of yelling in the show. So on an energy, you know, vibes wise, this is the opposite of Black Bag. This is very like, Black Bag is a lot of like people sitting in rooms and kind of like calm, cool, and collected, like analyzing each other, being very careful about the words that they say. This is Brian Tyree Henry screaming at Wagner Moura, like, over and over and over again. And they just seem like they are putting the train tracks down a millisecond before they cross over it. You know, it's one of those kind of like very high energy, very, yeah, manic is the word that I would use to describe the tone of this show. So I can totally understand why people would give this a try and be like, you know what, I gotta tap out. I just can't deal with this. This is like my blood pressure is rising listening to these guys try to make good decisions and fail and see what's going on. The DEA is trying to track them down. Like the real DEA is trying to track them down while these gangsters are trying to track them down as well. And it's just like a very high pressure situation that they find themselves in. But I think it's a pretty interesting show. Peter Craig, who worked on The Town, he wrote the screenplay for The Town. He also was one of the screenwriters of The Batman and Top Gun Maverick, is the creator of the show. And I think Ridley Scott directed the pilot. He definitely was involved in some capacity. Yeah. So yeah, it's a really interesting show. But again, like if you're not on the wavelength for that sort of high intensity energy, this might not be for you. But I would give it a try if you like, especially if you like Brian Tyree Henry as a performer, because he's very good at doing that thing, but it's just a very specific kind of thing in this show. So it's called Dope Thief. And then lastly, you and I both saw all four episodes of this show on Netflix called Adolescence, which is the number one show on Netflix, or was last time I checked. Chris talked about this like right before the show came out. He saw it a little bit early so he could write a review for Slash Film. I'll link to that in the show notes, but he was raving about it and said it's one of the best things that Netflix has ever done. And I think he's absolutely right. This is a tremendous show. I'll try not to repeat too much of what he said, but just in case people haven't heard about this, it's four episodes. Every episode is shot in one continuous take, like for real, no digital stitching or CGI or anything. And Stephen Graham is an actor and one of the co-creators of the show alongside Jack Thorne. And he is tremendous as this father whose teenage son is accused of murdering a young girl in their, I think, UK town. I don't remember exactly what town they're in, but yeah, it's kind of a show about kids and what can happen when they're left unattended, and how the manosphere, as you alluded to earlier, like these kind of the right wing algorithm and all of that kind of stuff can put all these terrible ideas in young kids' heads, and that can lead to absolute tragedy. So it's just a really gut-wrenching piece of television. It's an incredible technical achievement, but also really emotionally heightened and well done, and just a really powerful piece of television that just speaks to exactly the moment that we're living in right now. I know you're a big fan of this show, BJ. You wrote about your experiences as a teacher and how that sort of reflected what you saw in this show. Yeah. What did you think about this?
Yeah, this show is, you know, calling something must watch gets thrown around a lot, but I genuinely think that Adolescence is must watch, not just because it's really like spectacular in the craft of filmmaking, but also because it is one of the first times I've seen a series actually acknowledge the dangers of the manosphere and the radicalization of young boys in a way that isn't just lecturing, in a way that is also empathetic to the people who are being sucked into these worlds, but is also not trying to paint it as like, oh, let's have like endless sympathy and empathy and excuse all of these bad behaviors. It's like, no, it's still a problem because the radicalization of these young boys do bring on harm and violence towards women and girls. Like, these are the people that are hurt the most by this radicalization. And like, if we want to make the world a better, safer place for girls, we also have to listen to boys and help them. And like we have to work together on this. And I think that has been a big issue and something that people don't want to accept, that children are children. Something that I wrote in my piece is how young boys are often treated like they're problems before they're treated like people. And this show does a really good job at exploring that. And while never, ever, you know, giving the kid a pass for what he did. Like, it's like, nope, still hold him accountable. This is a problem. But like, here's how we can prevent it moving forward. It's great. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and every episode is a little different too. Like it showcases different aspects of this process. The first episode is what happens when this kid is arrested. And then there's an episode that is centered on a school where the police go in and try to ascertain some information from some classmates and things like that. And then there's an episode where the kid speaks to a therapist of some kind. I don't remember exactly what her official title is. And then there's an episode, the fourth one, is about the family and sort of the ripple effects of all of this on the kid's family. We never see the girl who's murdered. We never see her family, or really, I mean, with the exception of like her one friend who gets a few minutes of screen time in the second episode, we never really see how her life or social circle is impacted, which I thought was an interesting decision. But I guess just for the focus of the show, they decided to make that choice to kind of focus on the boy's family and his surroundings and the people in his life. But yeah, just a really incredible piece of television. So it's called Adolescence. It's on Netflix. I'm sure you've heard about it. And I think BJ and I are here to echo Chris and say it is just as good as you've heard. So definitely check that out if you're in the mindset for a pretty heavy but and harrowing but really unbelievable piece of TV. So there's that. Let's get into what we've been eating, BJ. What have you been eating recently?
I had some other things I wanted to talk about that I watched, Ben.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jeez, yeah. on our rundown here, Adolescence was listed last on yours, and then I forgot you had all this other stuff to talk about. Okay, so tell me what else you've been watching. Sorry, I jumped ahead.
You're totally fine. Okay, have you ever heard of a movie called The Terror of Tiny Town?
No, I have not.
Okay, so it is a 1938 American musical western produced by Jed Buell, directed by Sam Neufeld. This is a musical western where the cast is entirely comprised of little people. Many of them would also go on to play Munchkins in The Wizard of Oz. But this is like a very strange movie. It's not good. Let me straight up say that. It is just not good. I've become weirdly obsessed with it because somebody mentioned this in the wake of Snow White and discourse and how we treat little people actors. And I found out that the only reason this movie was made was because Hollywood was struggling so badly around this time that a producer was like, if things don't improve, we're going to only be able to cast, and then used the slur for little people that starts with the letter M. And they made a movie based off of that. And it is so strange. There are a lot of like gimmicks that they do. So they shot on like a lot of the Western sets that existed. So there's a lot of like having them walk into saloons, but because they're little people, they are underneath like the swinging doors. Instead of having horses, they all have like small like show ponies that they're riding. The music itself is like pretty good. I will say that, the musical aspect of it, but it's like an hour long. It is the strangest thing that I've ever watched. And I just needed the world to know that it existed.
So like I watched Todd Browning's Freaks for the first time a couple years ago and was kind of surprised given when that came out and kind of how anyone who is not a straight white dude has been treated by Hollywood over the years. I was surprised at how much that movie seemed like it was kind of on those characters' sides, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And does The Terror of Tiny Town feel like the movie has those characters' backs in some way, or does it feel like it's more looking and pointing at them as characters and like,
oh yeah,
that's
it's
the
gimmick.
Kind of thing that we're talking about?
Okay. It is gimmicky. And from what I've learned from the research, little people were paid less than their, you know, taller counterparts. So that was
great.
Also part of it. Yeah, you know, really great thing that we were doing in the 1930s. one thing that I will say, and because I watched this with my wife, we rented this from Vidiot's, but I think it's available on streaming some places. There is a blacksmith character, and this dude is jacked. Like, he's jacked, big beard. He's so hunky. And we were like, damn, they should have made this guy like a movie star, which of course was never going to happen in the 1930s. But like, he had it. We're like, that guy, like that's the guy right there. Yeah, it's a very, very strange movie. It was made for, I guess, $100,000. it shows. It's only about an hour, but yeah, just it's wild. The lead in it though is Billy Curtis, who is kind of like the most famous little person actor that existed. He's in a ton of stuff. He was in like Adventures of Superman TV series. He's in Wizard of Oz. He's in the circus troupe in Hitchcock's Saboteur. Like he's in a lot of stuff, and he's like the lead in the movie too. So
okay, yeah, so that is called The Terror of Tiny Town. Mm-hmm. And I just looked and it's streaming on Pluto TV right now, so people can check that out there. What else have you been watching, BJ?
I rewatched Twilight Breaking Dawn's Part 1 and 2. It is sequel month over on my podcast, This Ends at Prom, and we are finally finishing Twilight. We've been doing one Twilight movie a year, so we're finally done with it. And re-watching those movies have been such like a wild trip, because part of my career was built on the fact that I was a teenager writing about horror movies who hated Twilight. Like, I am very open about knowing that, but I've become so defensive of this film franchise in recent years because I believe that it deserves to exist. I think it catches a lot of unearned heat that is totally just rooted in misogyny. These movies are not good. They're ridiculous. But all I could think about watching Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2 is that there's this like huge battle scene in it. And it's revealed that like, you know, oh, it was just like a vision. It's not real. And all I could think about was the insanity of hardcore fans of this franchise and this book series who showed up to the theater. And suddenly there's a scene that's not in the book where their favorite characters are getting killed off one by one. And how maddening that like of a decision that is to just like pull one over over your entire like hardcore fan base, I think is actually one of the ballsiest things that's ever happened. Bill Condon, you're a madman.
Yeah, like a true troll job right there.
Right. Like yeah,
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, it would be like if you be like if you showed up to like a superhero movie, like you went to go see like a Batman movie or something, and then there's 15 minutes where like all of the rogues gallery just like stab Batman and leave him dead and then like move on as if like just not acknowledging it, and then after it's like, just kidding, that's what could happen though if you make this decision. Hilarious. Like, could you imagine how people would react? Nobody would be normal.
Yeah, it would be like the end of Infinity War times a million or something.
Yes, but, yes.
yeah. I was just going to say the reputation of Twilight and the way that people kind of have been dunking on those movies for years, to me, it just reeks of like the Razzies mentality, you know, like mm-hmm. that kind of pile on thing where like I'm guessing half the people who are like Twilight sucks has never seen any of the movies, you know, and mm-hmm. so I'm glad that you guys are able to look at it through a modern lens and kind of reclaim it, at least in your minds. So, check out This Ends in Prom.
Oh, thank you. And then, yeah, the last thing I watched is my wife is currently filling in all of her gaps of Ken Russell's filmography. And so she tends to enjoy his weirder, campier stuff, a lot of his music movies, like The Boyfriend, Chef's Kiss, incredible. But she finally got to see Altered States for the first time, and it was it's been a while since I watched that. Damn, that movie rocks. It is so weird and so interesting to look at. It is so unlike anything else in Ken Russell's filmography. Really, really, really weird, great movie that I don't think gets talked about nearly as much as it should. I kind of cannot believe that it is like, I think it's like William Hurt's like debut, which is wild because he's incredible in it. Great movie. I know that's like a ice cold take because everybody loves Altered States, but hey, if you haven't watched it in a while, it still holds up.
Yeah, I've never seen this. This is available for rent for like $4 right now at the various places where you can rent things. So I need to check this one off my list. So that's Altered States.
Yeah, fantastic. It's, you know, research about sensory deprivation and the idea that all of us are living simultaneous timelines, but it depends on what state of consciousness that you're in to feel it, so that when people take hallucinogenic drugs and like see things, what they're actually seeing are like other timelines existing. Like, it's nuts. It's Whoa. So awesome.
That's fascinating. I had no idea. Okay, very cool. Yeah, all right, so stuff. Now I think we've reached the point where we can get into what we've been eating. Tell me what yes. you've been eating recently, BJ.
All right. So as listeners probably already know, I am an Aldi girl for life. Aldi has these breakfast bites that are French toast meatballs. They also have ones that are like, you know, egg and spices or whatever. I don't care about that. French toast meatballs, dude, they are so good. I am like living off of these right now. They are so flipping good. It's like a breakfast sausage meatball, and there's like a little bit of like mapley French toast in it. So if people are like, you know, participating in like the McDonald's boycott and you're like, oh man, but I really want a McGriddle, Aldi has you covered. These breakfast bite meatballs are so good. It's ridiculous.
Man, I really need to check out an Aldi. I don't think I've ever been in one. And you're talking about Aldi stuff on here sometimes. Brad's talking about Aldi stuff sometimes. Mm-hmm. There's one that opened not too far from me a couple years ago, and I just have never been in there yet. But okay, Aldi Breakfast Bites French Toast Meatballs is the food. So check that out if that yeah. sounds like it's I up mean, your alley.
Because a lot of people are like anti-Aldi because they're like, isn't that where poor people shop? First off, yes, I am a poor people. Second off, Aldi and Trader Joe's have the same parent company. And so a lot of times you'll have the exact same products in their stores. Aldi's are just cheaper and have a different name. So there you go. That's yeah. my pro Aldi plug for the day.
Okay. Pro tip there. All right. So the last section here is what we've been playing. I've been yes. playing a lot of The Last of Us Part 2, getting ready for the second season of that show.
Nice.
So I'll probably talk about that when I finish the game. But what have you been playing recently?
Have you heard of a game called Pizza Tower?
I haven't, and I feel like I should have.
All right, so Pizza Tower, it's like a more of an indie release video game, but it is a 2D platforming game, and it plays sort of like a combination between like Sonic the Hedgehog and like WarioWare or Wario Land. All of the animation looks like something out of like Ren and Stimpy or Liquid Television. So like you play the game and you're like, is this just like a game they updated from the 90s that I never played? Nope, it's a new game. That's just the aesthetic that they chose. And it is so weird and like the animation's kind of gross, but in like that Ren and Stimpy way. But yeah, you're an Italian pizza chef and your pizzeria is not doing great. And then there's this like villainous pizza face that's a sentient floating piece of pizza that's going to try to destroy your pizzeria with a nuclear laser. And so you have to like ascend this pizza tower and defeat pizza face to save the pizzeria. It's so awesome and weird. And I just need everyone to know about it. I'm not good at it.
Did you watch all that growing
up? Oh, yes. Yes. Show? Okay. Yes. It is very much the same energy of like Pizza Face and like the kid with the big ears and all that. Like it is yeah. that kind of weirdness.
Yeah. When you were describing that, I just had flashbacks to Ear Boy and Pizza Face from all that. So,
yes.
It's weird what kind of stuff gets trapped in your mind and you just don't think about it for 30 years and then all of a sudden you remember. So,
yeah. It's thank very you for that, much BJ. The weird Nickelodeon 90s energy. Like the game is like an animated, like this would be like an animated short that they would play after Pete and Pete. Like it's that kind of weirdness. It's so fun.
All right, so the game is called Pizza Tower. Definitely check that out. And that'll do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about a lot of what we talked about at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. We'd really appreciate that. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.